How are you, sir?
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Lucian Gillum. I'm an attorney for Sergeant Doris, who has brought a USERRA action against TXD Services. This is an unusual case in that summary judgment was moved for on the basis that my client could not establish a motivating factor. His military service was a motivating factor. Judge Baker below actually found that he had created the fact issue on that point, but then granted summary judgment on the same decision defense that's contained within USERRA. And this is problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, if my client can establish that military service was a motivating factor in the decision to terminate him, then that essentially is creating a fact issue as to intent. And I think it creates a problem when it's summary judgment. The judge then finds with all
inference. Can I just stop you? Because when you just talk about the termination issue, I understand the list problem with Fox and the argument that the way Mr. Doris was treated while he was on leave prevented him from being on a list, which then adversely affected him on his return with the new employer. That I understand. Then your brief talks a lot about this. I have a separate issue because he was fired, and I don't understand that claim. First of all, I don't understand how the firing in the fall of 2007, standing alone, leaving aside, if you don't prevail on the list issue, then this question is, what's left of the firing claim?
Well, I think that the list issue is significant, but the way the statute reads, 4311, is that a person who performs uniform service shall not be denied initial employment, reemployment, retention employment, or any benefit of employment by an employer on the basis of that performance of service. So the first thing is retention employment basically means don't fire him.
Did you notice that in Liz Dahl, our panel wrote that the 4311 claim arises after reinstatement?
In which case?
Liz Dahl.
No, I did not, sir.
Well, that would normally be true because the reinstatement is your primary USERRA 4312 right. Mm-hmm. And whether you are thereafter somehow discriminated against gives rise to a 4311 claim. And well, so Liz Dahl is remarking on the normal sequence in which these claims arise, leaving aside that the number sequence is opposite.
Well,
we now have a 4311A claim when there's no, by my hypothetical, there's no good claim for reinstatement. And it seems to me, I don't see the adverse employment action. I don't see why the change in circumstances provision wouldn't apply, because this 4311 claim is really a duplication of 4312. So I've got a lot of conceptual problems with this sort of bare he was fired freestanding claim.
Well, I agree that there is not a reinstatement claim, but I don't agree.
Well, that would be the employee list. I mean, if there hadn't been a Fox, and he had come back to TXD, and they said, "Oh, you're fired," then that's a
but
basic.
But Fox never knew, so they couldn't.
No. Forget Fox. Right. He would have a basic 4312.
Yeah, if there had never been a Fox and there had
never
been a sale,
been a
that's
Fox.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. So the employee list takes care of is the substitute 4312. I didn't get it with the successor because. But leave that aside. If the only thing bad from a USERRA standpoint that happened to him was he got this COBRA notice saying you're terminated, and when he called to inquire, they said, "Yeah, you didn't. clerical people said you didn't show up for work, so the books show you as fired. What's first thing? Any damage? What's your? How can you have a claim without an injury?
Well, I think there is injury because.
But what is it besides the list?
Okay, well, because he was not on the list, he was not able to get immediate reemployment.
That's
with
the list claim.
Leave the list out.
Well, but the list is important because.
No, we understand your list claim.
Yeah.
Well, I have a question about the list claim, but if you want to talk.
No, go ahead. Do the list claim. That's more important.
That's your main. On the list claim, what's the injury?
Well, had he been on the list, you know, what Fox had done is they had re-interviewed all these employees. They hired all of them. And had he been on the list, he would have been eligible to go in there immediately rather than taking 4 months.
Is it 2 months?
To go through a hiring.
4 months?
Process.
How many months?
You say 4 months, but he admitted that he was on duty through February of 2009.
Well,
in the interrogatories. But you keep saying
he came back
December.
In December of 2008. I think he was supposed to be on duty through February of 2009, but he was injured in an IED explosion. He was back by December of 2008. They had sent him home.
But
and
was
he calling
was he discharged?
Yeah.
Was he discharged as of December 2008, or was he still in the service through February?
Well, he's still in the service to this day, but
changed
he was,
from active to reserve.
He was
counsel.
Not,
did he change from active to reserve somewhere in there?
I'm sorry. What
did he change from an active duty status to some kind of reserve status during that period of time? Is that
I don't
in
know
the record?
If he was. I don't know. I don't think it's in the record if he was officially. Not active duty as of the time he came back, but he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't. He was.
When
he
was he free to work?
Obliged to show
wait,
up
wait.
The
it looked like
base.
To me
he was,
that
he was looking for work. He was wanting to go back to work as.
He wanted to go back to work before February of 2009?
Yes, sir.
Well, I don't know about that. In the record, there seemed to be some admissions that he was still on this active duty assignment through February, even if he may have come back. But that's my real question is. Your point is that somehow he was harmed by not being on the list because it slowed down
the
application?
Process.
Well, how did it slow it down?
Well, he had to go through and do an application process, background check, those sorts of things, rather than...
What evidence is there that that Fox didn't do a similar process with the people on the list?
Well, with the people on the list, Fox interviewed them. It hired them. It continued to work TXD's contracts. There wasn't a break in service, essentially. People went, continued to work.
But that happened before.
That happened back in, it would have been January, February of 2008 while Mr.
Right.
Burris was in Iraq.
Right.
And so.
But your man wrote to them and they interviewed him and hired him.
Eventually, yes. Yeah, it took him until April of
2009.
April of 2009 is when he went to work
for Fox. I just wasn't sure what evidence there was that if it's a two-month lag, that that's any different from what he would have received if he'd been on the list, because they still would have had to wait till he came back and was finished with his duty. And then they would have been entitled to go through some kind of interview process, right? Because they didn't agree to hire everybody just to...
They agreed to employ reasonable efforts and to do interviews, basically. They didn't guarantee that they would hire every single person. But the fact is that there were
no... So there was
no,
some screening process.
But the fact is they continued to work TXD's contracts using TXD's equipment and that there was not one single unemployment claim made against TXD.
Yeah.
So it's a reasonable assumption... at summary judgment that what that means is that people continue to work without a break in employment. So.
Well, but there, without a break, but wasn't there some period before the business was turned over to Fox when Fox was going through this process of considering the former employees?
Well, I mean.
It wouldn't have happened all on one day. They must have had some advance time.
Well, but. For instance, you could go and conduct the interviews while TXD is still conducting its contracts and doing its work. And
yeah.
And the fact is that
that's what I mean. But your man wasn't available.
Once again, they picked up TXT's contracts and performed them.
But your man wasn't available during that time.
No, sir, he was not.
To be considered, so you have to build in to treat him the same. You still would think the company's allowed to build in some lag time to approximate the time that.
Well, I mean,
you're talking about.
They could have. I suppose they could have done that, but it does not appear that they did. I guess is what I would say. Appears that they got people working immediately.
Well,
what's in the record on that? What's in the record that if you were a warm body there in the day that changed from TXD to Fox, you got hired?
What's in the record is that there were no successful unemployment claims or any unemployment claims made against TXD. And you know, if you lose your job and you're not working, you can make an unemployment claim. And what's in the record is that Fox continued to conduct TXD's contracts without a break in service. And so those are the two things that are in the record.
But there must have been some time before the break would have occurred when Fox was considering the employees and deciding to keep them. Was that over a period of a month before the switch in business?
We don't,
2 months?
I don't know exactly what the time was that Fox was considering.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
But it's what it comes down to is that, you know, if you're taking over an operation, it would make sense to go in. You don't want to have a break in service. You don't want to breach the contracts you're assuming. So you would probably go conduct these interviews before there was ever a before you took over.
Right.
And the evidence that they did
that
is the lack of unemployment claims and the.
But I'm saying that doesn't necessarily help your claim. If that took them a couple months to do that process, then your man's not treated any differently if he's vetted over a couple months and given a job.
Well, but there's no evidence that, there's no evidence that it took a couple of months. And B, since this went off on a same decision defense, it's the employer's burden of proof, not my burden of proof.
Well, let me ask you this, a different question. What evidence is there in the record that any inactive employee of TXD was on the list provided Fox? Inactive for any reason?
The only evidence on that point is Joe Poe's affidavit. He was the company owner. That we did not consider employees on long-term military leaves to be employees or something.
He doesn't talk about people on other kind of leaves?
I'm talking about disability.
Yeah,
or
just not there.
There is no evidence about
FMLA?
Any other kind of leave.
FMLA?
No other kind of leave. There is no evidence about any other kind of leave. There is no other person who was treated this way. There is no written policy.
Now wait. Well,
there's only Joe Poe's
affidavit. Other person meaning? You mean there were no other inactive employees?
Well, there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that there was another inactive employee, another employee on military leave, FMLA leave,
wasn't the argument,
disability leave, any kind of.
When was this argument made? I thought it was the basis of the district court's decision.
Well, it.
When was the argument made?
Now, the argument.
How did the district court hear this issue?
Well, it's an interesting point, Your Honor, because what happened is that they moved on a reinstatement claim and a discrimination claim. We responded, and the issue discussed in the summary judgment briefing was motivating factor. Nobody discussed the same decision issue. The judge ruled that way, sua sponte. It wasn't discussed by either side, I don't think.
So it wasn't really briefed, you're saying?
No, I mean, people didn't talk about the same decision. They just talked about the evidence.
Yeah. That's all she cites is the affidavit, right?
Right. Yeah. And the problem is it's their burden of proof.
And your point
is it's an objective.
It? Yeah.
It's an objective. You have to provide some objective.
You're saying
evidence.
Poe's not inherently credible. Whether he's just making this up or not is a fact issue.
Right. And it's summary judgment. At a trial, a jury might believe him, but at summary judgment, a jury must be assumed that a jury might not. I got 23 seconds, so I'm going to stand up.
Mr. Block?
Yes, sir. May it please the court. My name is Cale Block. I'm with the law firm of Barbara McCaskill Jones and Hale of Little Rock for the Appalee TXD Services LP. I want to start with the end of Appalee's oral argument, where it was argued that there has to be some sort of objective evidence that Mr. Poe was inherently uncredible.
No, I want to hear where the basis for the trial court's, what I thought was the trial court's operative assumption, that all in, if you were inactive for any reason, you weren't on the list.
Well, Your Honor,
Did I misconstrue the district court's ruling?
Run that question by me again.
I think you argued it, didn't you?
If you're not inactive, you're not on the list?
Yeah.
Oh, you're correct, Your Honor, and there are three elements.
Okay, where do we get that from? Where did the district court, because I thought that was the basis, that was the easy basis for the employee list issue.
You're correct, and the first element is Mr. Poe's affidavit, and it is at appendix.
Counsel, Mr. Poe's affidavit is rank discrimination this law meant to prevent. It says people gone in the military, we don't consider them to be employees to have any rights. That is exactly why Congress passed this law and has upped the ante on it several times as late as the Persian Gulf War.
Your Honor,
I disagree. My goodness, and the district court uses that as the linchpin of the whole argument.
Your Honor, I actually disagree. The USERRA only requires that an employee on military leave be treated as any other employee who is on any other type
of
leave.
Yeah, but where is there any evidence in this record of any other employee on any other kind of leave? I didn't see any at all.
Well, Your Honor, there was presented no evidence of any other employee on any other type of leave. And to the point that there must be some sort of objective evidence, I'd like to return to appellant's argument that there has to be some sort of objective evidence.
Well,
I don't believe that's correct, and I believe you, Judge Benton, actually said that in the case of Torgerson versus Rochester. The case on which appellant relies.
The court did. It was in bank.
Sir. You wrote the opinion.
You don't need it to prove the defense. You may not need it, but the question here is whether there's a fact issue.
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Why is it that Poe can just say, if we had any other employees, we would have treated them the same way?
Well, frankly,
and have that be a matter of law.
It's because it's the only evidence in the record.
Counsel,
but he's not necessarily credible. I guess that's.
But he is all there is, and not only it's
well,
not
counsel,
only.
Well, counsel, but he only mentions military. I've pored over this affidavit. Show me where he mentions anybody but military people. His paragraph 5 says we didn't consider individuals absent due to the military to be, and in communication we didn't consider individuals with the military.
Your Honor, I believe that's clarified in Mr. Poe's deposition in the appendix. A couple of places. Number one, in appendix 126 and 127.
What page of the appendix?
126 and 127, Your Honor.
Well, my appendix ends at 111.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. It is a supplemental separate appendix that was filed by appellant.
And you continued the pagination, right? Is that the one?
That, yes, sir. It's appellant's appendix, but he does consider.
That's his affidavit.
That is the affidavit. That's correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, I do believe, and I apologize for not having a citation in my outline here. I do believe that Mr. Poe clarified that in his deposition, but I'm afraid I can't point to that specific page at the moment. There are two other elements that I believe.
I'm looking at Appendix 26. I didn't have the supplemental appendix.
I'm sorry. It's in the supplemental separate appendix.
So this paragraph 5 is in the.
Yes, Your Honor. So paragraph 5 of the affidavit.
Is that the paragraph 5 I just quoted to you?
It is, Your Honor.
Well, it only mentions military, counsel. Read it.
No, that's you're correct.
Take a deep breath. It only mentions military.
You're correct, Your Honor, and yep. I do agree that the affidavit only mentions military.
Yep. And so you think there's got to be something in the affidavit then that clarifies about other people and other status?
The deposition, Your Honor.
Okay.
I do not have a specific reference to that. Would be glad to clarify it later.
Is that part of the summary judgment record?
The deposition?
Yes.
You're correct. Yes, Your Honor.
But the district court didn't reference the deposition.
And I would verify that how?
It's located in the appendix
Pardon?
It's located the summary judgment, the motions for summary judgment, and the brief and response.
I don't know how depositions in this electronic age work. I mean, you used to have to file and designate.
They are transcripts are attached as exhibits to the to the motions and brief for summary judgment.
It was the full transcript.
It might have been redacted portions.
Well, how do we know that the part you love was not redacted?
Well, Your Honor, I'd have to rely.
I've seen that happen, huh?
I would rely on my esteemed opposing counsel to point out the parts that are not good for my client.
You know, how can I tell? I hope your summary judgment papers to the district court and all the exhibits are properly in our electronic record, because I've seen too many lawyers mess this up in summary judgment matters, where they're regaling us with this wonderful deposition testimony that was never designated for the district court and therefore is not in the summary judgment record on appeal.
Your Honor, I believe the only...
Does he say in this wonderful testimony? He covers people on disability leave and long-term vacations?
Maybe not specifically,
Who does he cover specifically?
Well, that it is their policy to consider employees on any type of leave. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's TDX.
TXD Services LP.
But the they that matters is Fox.
No, Your Honor, it's not. TXD okay. Services LP is the...
They
entity.
Made the list.
That is correct. They created the list.
Is the list in the summary judgment?
It is, Your Honor. It is on page.
And is the employee categorization of everybody on the list, show on the list?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
How do we look at the list and know that Fox was only interested in and therefore was only given a list of active employees so they could promptly interview?
Your Honor, that is... I'm quoting from the same paragraph 5 of the affidavit of Joe Poe. In communications with third parties, TXD LP would not include individuals serving long-term military commitments in any roster of employees. I believe that's it, Your Honor. I believe that that addresses the issue of whether active employees were included,
on
the list. That is, you're correct, Your Honor, that the affidavit does military.
What if an employee was on... workers' comp 60-day injury leave, would he or she have been on the list?
Your Honor, my answer to that question is no, and my answer to your inevitable follow-up question is I don't have that located in the transcript.
I thought there was nothing on that at all.
In the deposition transcript?
The district court doesn't refer to it at all. I don't think my clerks found anything, but help me. You think it's in the deposition he addresses that?
Your Honor, I have a recollection that it is, but I certainly can't cite to it at the moment.
Well, it seems to be a key point. Should we infer, since you can't find it, that it isn't there?
I'd ask that you wouldn't, Your Honor.
We don't necessarily have to look for a needle in the haystack if you can't even put it in your brief or point it out at oral argument.
Find the stack. They're kind of, hey...
Well, Your Honor, there are two other elements that I would say go to the point that you're raising that have nothing to do with the deposition. The first is the testimony of Joe Poe that is in the record. It is on appendix page 121, and this is actually the deposition of the appellant himself, who recalls a conversation with Mr. Poe wherein Mr. Poe says, "If you're not well, I should back up. I should give you some."
If you're not working for me, I'm not going to be paying you.
Precisely, Your Honor.
That says nothing, right?
Well, I believe it does, though. I believe it says if you are, it goes to the argument that where an employee is gone, considered inactive.
You have to be paid to be on the list. All that says is he wouldn't pay him, but it doesn't say he wouldn't put him on the list.
Well, I believe when taken in consideration with other evidence, specifically the affidavit of Joe Poe, that statement, and the third statement, or the third element, the COBRA notice, where my client notified its COBRA servicer that Mr. Doris was going to be inactive, and he received his COBRA termination notice, that shows that also he was considered inactive.
But that's not the critical fact. It's those phone calls. I agree. I don't understand that if the USERRA regs mandate that COBRA notice, I don't understand how that COBRA notice could trigger USERRA liability. But when he then calls up because his wife is distressed at getting that notice, and two different people apparently say, yeah, you're fired, that's a whole different ballgame.
Well,
and that isn't even referenced in your brief.
Well, Your Honor, it's because appellant has admitted this is not a reinstatement or a termination action. And they're in their response to the motion for summary judgment, and again today, there's been reference to a discrimination action,
but
not a reinstatement action.
The motivating factor between the affidavit being almost a per se violation of the statute and these phone calls, I don't see how you can bring a motion on the motivating factor issue.
Well, Your Honor, it's not necessarily the termination, and I think appellant also concedes this in his brief. The key here isn't the notification of the COBRA servicer that there is some sort of termination. And I should also point out that termination under COBRA doesn't mean firing, doesn't mean a termination of employment without consent. It just means some sort of separation. It could be some sort of leave, any type of leave.
It isn't the notice that's the summary judgment problem. It's those phone calls.
Well, Your Honor, I'm...
One person in the local office and one person in the home office, as I read the record as summarized, says, oh, yeah, you've been fired. You didn't show up for work.
Well, and two things. Number one, if this... I want to go back to appellant's concession that this isn't a termination
now, those
action.
Those are true. That, we take those as true.
Those phone calls are in the record, and I certainly have no evidence that they're false.
That's what he was told.
And the second...
That was a COBRA notice, and you know, ask your lawyer what it means.
Well, the second...
Oh, yeah, the records say you were fired.
And, Your Honor, the second point to your question there is that even if you could consider that a termination because of the phone calls... then this would be governed under the change of circumstances exception to USERRA because...
No, it gets you to the list. That's why he wasn't on the list. He wasn't on the list because he'd been fired.
Well, Your Honor, and if that does get us to the list, there are two problems. There are two additional problems. In addition to the... So we've been talking a lot about my argument that there is no discriminatory action or that the action would have been taken anyway. There are two other points regarding the list. The first that your honors absolutely addressed in appellant's oral argument that there is no damage here. In fact, it was Judge Colton who said,
"Isn't there a question of fact about the damage?" I'm sorry, I beat Judge Colton.
I don't believe there is, Your Honor, for a couple of reasons. Number one, USERRA actually requires reapplication. So, regardless of whether Mr. Doris was on the list, in order to avail himself of the protections of USERRA, he would have had to have reapply to TXD, to Fox Energy, to someone. So to argue that he had to reapply, that there is damage because he had to reapply, is contrary to USERRA itself, which says reapplication is, in fact, a requirement. So regardless of the discrimination issue, regardless of the same action defense, I think that there is a third element there, that there is no harm.
Has that issue ever been briefed?
It was raised very very briefly by the trial court at one of the last sentences of its order. That the trial judge was not convinced that the requirement that appellant reapply.
Well, she says not mental pain and anguish and suffering. She doesn't mention months delay or anything.
I mean, the court is therefore not persuaded that Doris is having to go through an application process creates liability as to TXD under USERRA.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct, Your Honor. I certainly wish that was fleshed out a little further in the order, but I think that the implication there is that because USERRA requires reapplication, then the requirement that appellant reapply is not a violation of USERRA.
Unless he's put in a different track than assembly situated employee.
Which is all that's required under the CFA, right, that he be treated as a similarly situated employee.
So how do we know that he was treated the same way the people on the list were treated?
I think oral argument today has, I think there were admissions that,
I'll
point to the record, Your Honor. On appendix page 80 is Mr. Poe's depot where he says that Fox Energy went and interviewed the other employees and then hired the ones they thought would be necessary or the ones they wanted to rehire, which is exactly what happened, which is exactly what appellant has admitted happened to him. He came to Fox Energy, reapplied, they rehired him.
Anything about the time period?
There is nothing, Your Honor, there's nothing about the time period in the record.
Thank you.
And the final, if I, in my last 10 seconds, if I can mention that the failure to reapply itself bars a USERRA claim, that within 90 days after someone who has been deployed for the length of time Mr. Doris was deployed, they are required to reapply. There was no reapplication. Instead, there were communications to a sister company and the purchaser of TXD's assets. That bars the USERRA claim. Barring any further questions, I am out of time, and I respectfully request that the court uphold the trial court's decision.
Thank you, counsel. Does Mr. Gilliam have some time?
Mr. Gilliam has less than 1 minute remaining.
First of all, my client did reapply both with Fox and with TXD. He called them. He
within 90
them
days, counsel?
Within 90 days, yes.
Law
he actually sent a letter to Fox while he was on a short leave in August of 2008 and then contacted TXD both by email prior to returning home and after he returned home. So he did apply. I wanted to cite you to three cases that have to do with what the defendant has to show on the same decision defense. There's Hill versus Lockheed Martin Logistics. That is 314 F3rd 647 at page 674. It's a Fourth Circuit case. And they said that the employer will be entitled to summary judgment only if it proffers evidence that is so one-sided that a rational fact finder could only conclude that the employer must prevail on its same decision defense. Perry versus King, that is 878 F2nd 1056, it's 8th Circuit, 1989, and they said that the defendant cannot refute this evidence by mere articulation of other reasons. Defendant can only rebut by proving by a preponderance of the evidence that the same decision would have been made. Essentially, since Poe's affidavit is not credible at this stage of a case, all they did was articulate, not prove. And they were citing Bell versus Birmingham Linen Service 715 F2nd 1552. That was 11th Circuit 1983. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case has been well argued and rather novel issues. We'll take it under advisement.